Welcome to the Podcasting Gear Show, where we open up the studio doors and look at the equipment, the software, and the apps, and the plugins that make it all happen, that podcasters like yourself can't live without. And now, here's your host, Scott Herzog.
Welcome to the Podcasting Gear Show. This is episode 13, and tonight we are talking about my favorite choice when it comes to editing software for our podcast. We are talking Adobe Audition with Christopher Jones from Trek FM. Christopher Jones does so many podcasts. I think his network has, I'm going to get this figure wrong, somewhere between 14 to 16 podcasts, seven of them of which he is a part of, one of which is daily. I honestly don't know how the guy does it. We have an incredible conversation where we talk about software editing and what sold him and under what conditions you may want to be using Adobe Audition. Adobe Audition may not be for everyone. It's definitely not for the beginning podcaster. But if you're serious about your podcasting, maybe you buy into the Creative Cloud anyways because of other business endeavors. It's easy to make that switch and transition into Adobe Audition, as you're going to hear. The interview runs a little bit long tonight, so I am not going to be doing the podcasting term in 5 minutes or less. But stay tuned for after the show, and I'll have a little bit of commentary on that and tell you how you can find it. By the way, if you want to find the show notes for this show, you can just go to podcastingguru/Adobe Audition. Well, welcome to the show today. With me, I have Christopher Jones from the Trek FM network. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is great. I think this is probably the furthest I've ever had someone on this podcast. So you are where in what country right now?
I'm aboard the space station orbiting the... No, I'm in Japan right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, with Trek FM, you would expect to be on the Enterprise somewhere just cycling... somewhere in deep space.
That's right. So. I'm coming to you via subspace communication.
That's right, right. Well, it's great to have you on, Chris. It really is.
Yeah, great to be here. We've never talked in person, have we? Even though we both do science fiction podcasts and we cross paths on Twitter for quite a few years now.
Yeah, absolutely. With the Sci-Fi Diner podcast and our podcast, we certainly have crossed paths and certainly have hit common people along our way. It's just we have never hooked up. But tonight we're talking gear, and that's going to be awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your podcasting history. How did you get into podcasting, Chris?
It was sort of a long journey for me. My background is in magazines. That's where I started my career almost 20 years ago. And I started out working in production, like in pre-press specifically. But then I moved into design. So I was an art director for magazines for a long time. I was also a managing editor. And then I moved into communications management, and then corporate branding and marketing. And so all these things rolled together. I've always had this drive to create content and to share content. And when podcasting came along, it started to really interest me, but I listened to podcasts for 6 years before I ever started podcasting. The first podcast I listened to was Adam Christensen's MacCast, which was the only podcast I listened to for quite a few years. And then I started listening to what used to be called Are We Alone, which is now Big Picture Science with Seth Shostak. And those got me really interested in it. And eventually I decided that I wanted to take everything that I had learned in my career up to that point in publishing and media and roll it into podcasting and talk about the subject that I love, which is Star Trek. And that started in 2010. That's when I began podcasting.
Awesome. And so now, as a result of that, how many shows do you do? What shows are you doing? How many shows have you done?
I lose track of how many shows I'm doing. Actually, my network has 16 shows, but I'm not on all of those. But I am on 7 of them, I believe. And all of them, except for one, are weekly. And then one of them is daily. So I am podcasting every single day.
Wow. Wow. That keeps you very busy.
It does.
And you have a family and everything else that you're running. And that's often a challenge, juggling all that together.
It really, really is.
Yeah.
But I have a great team on the network. I mean, if it weren't for everyone else on the network, Trek FM would fall apart in probably 24 hours because it's just, it's really a lot of work to keep it going. So I have great, great people on the network.
So Trek FM, tell us a little bit about the premise or the idea or maybe the mission kind of behind Trek FM.
Well, our tagline is "Let's talk Trek." So that's basically what we want to do, talk about Star Trek. But the reason I started my first podcast, which is The Ready Room, that's the first actual podcast. Before that, I did a video podcast, but it was a short news show. The Ready Room is the first big discussion podcast. And the reason I started it is around 2008, I, as I mentioned, had been into listening to MacCast and Are We Alone? And I started looking for podcasts about Star Trek. And I didn't find anything that I thought was worth listening to. And not to criticize anyone else who's out there, and I don't even remember the shows that I found at the time, because there are a lot of very good Star Trek podcasts out there now. But I remember tuning into one, and I was expecting to hear them talk about the episodes and kind of dig into the characters and the stories. And instead, they were talking about what would it be like if the TNG characters retired from Starfleet and started their own businesses. And they spent all this time talking about Worf running a bowling alley. And I thought, this is not interesting to me at all. I really, really want to talk about Star Trek because many, many years ago in 2000, actually, is when I started it. I used to write a column called Science Fiction and Society. And it wasn't about Star Trek. It was about SF literature. Primarily, and also movies and TV a little bit. But what I did is I always dug really deeply into the stories to look for the social commentary in the stories, and then I would expand upon that. And that's what I wanted to do for Star Trek as well. And so what we do with the network is we try to take an in-depth approach to the stories and the themes in Star Trek, and we also try to take a balanced view of it. So we don't go back and forth with, I think this is great and you don't like it, so you're dumb because you don't agree with me. Because that's what you get on so many podcasts. And I really don't like that because it's counter to the very basic premise of Star Trek, which is diversity.
The idea that not everyone's going to agree on the same points. We all come from different backgrounds and that's okay. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So we try to really look at the stories, the themes, the characters from different angles, and try to see the other person's perspective.
When you first started getting into podcasting, what audio software were you using to edit your podcasts or to record them?
GarageBand, because I'm a Mac person. And so I think for most Mac people, that's where you start because it's right there on the computer and it's pretty good software and it's free. So why not?
Right. Yeah, right now, especially if you're just starting out, you don't have a lot of funds to necessarily throw out your podcast. You want to throw them at your microphones and other things. GarageBand was where I started with podcasting, although I did use Logic Audio Pro prior to that. But then I got a Mac and it was just there and I got into podcasting. It made sense. You started with GarageBand. What did you shift into next as an audio software editor?
After GarageBand, I went to Logic because, like you, I also used Logic before I was podcasting because I would create music for projects. And I actually am a musician. I'm classically trained. I played professionally in orchestra for 7 years. And
what do you play?
I play bass trombone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
My daughter would love that. She plays the trombone.
Oh, so. Does she? Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, she was on just a little bit before we started recording, so yeah, just had a chance to meet her.
I had a brief chat with her, yeah. So I have a musical background, and I would put together music for projects. I do video projects for clients. These are usually marketing communications projects. And it's, you know, Logic is great, and GarageBand is good for this as well, but if you want more control, Logic was better for creating soundtracks and being able to work with more complex layering of tracks and such. But I didn't use it for podcasting initially. I'm not sure why, but I didn't. But after with GarageBand, I quickly got fed up with GarageBand because I'm a perfectionist and I like to have fine-tuned control over my work. And that's what I'm accustomed to with all the other software that I use in my design career. And you just can't get that with GarageBand. And it's also really important for me to be able to see the waveform. And you can't see the waveform very well in GarageBand. So
yeah, that's true.
Since I had Logic and I was familiar with it, I shifted over to Logic. And I used that for a long time. And then I finally decided that this also wasn't quite doing what I wanted it to do.
Yeah. And then from there, you shifted to what software?
Then I moved into Audition, which is what I use now, Adobe Audition, which I absolutely love. And the way I was able to shift into Audition actually is because of Creative Cloud. Now, I know that a lot of creatives don't like Creative Cloud. They don't like the concept of the pricing of it. You know, you want to buy your software
and own it outright.
There you have it.
Yeah.
But Adobe software is really, really expensive. And I'm primarily a print and then a web designer. And so I would always buy Creative Suite that included Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign and Dreamweaver and Flash. But of course, the audio stuff wasn't in there. And for a long time, if I'm not mistaken, Audition was only available on Windows.
It was. It's changed about the past couple of years.
Couple of years, yeah. And so when Creative Cloud came around, I bought into that for my usual applications. And a bonus was that I now had access to Audition CC. And I guess it was Audition's, I think it was CS6 when Creative Cloud first, no, it would have been CC, wouldn't it? I can't remember how they structured it.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can't remember how they structured it. I think it was actually CS6 and then they released CC. So anyway, I had access to Audition and so I installed it and just fell in love with it right away from an editing standpoint.
Awesome. So the shift for you from... you said you used Logic before. The shift from Logic to Adobe Audition, probably not that extreme, at least in my point of view.
Not really. They're fairly similar. And I still use Logic for a few things here and there. And I have Logic 10 now, which is beautifully designed. But I find that it's really touchy, which is one reason I don't like to edit in there. It's sluggish and it can be very touchy. And it might just be my hardware. Like if I had a new Mac Pro, maybe it would fly, you know, but I don't. I have a cheese grater. I have the last cheese grater that they made in 2010, and I've modified it. You know, I've put SSD drives in it and USB 3.0 cards and things in it to try to get more life out of it. But still, Logic doesn't run very well and doesn't run very smoothly, and that really, really impacts your workflow.
I think we're going to lose the video here.
Audition is very snappy. And it's very easy to splice and blend and whatever you need to do.
And really, if you've been working with audio software editors before, it's kind of there's a little bit of a learning curve, and but they're somewhat intuitive.
Right. Yeah. I think if you know how to use Logic, you can transition to Audition very, very easily. It's the same principle.
How about for someone that's saying, well, I've always heard of Adobe Audition. I'm using Audacity or I'm using GarageBand. How much of a learning curve do they have if they shift to Adobe Audition?
You know, honestly, I think that the learning curve is mental. I think that people probably would be, the obstacle would be their own fear that the software is too complex, because when you open it up, it looks complex. Of course, you've got panels all over the place and it has so many features that don't exist in those other applications. But it's really not that difficult to use. I think it's very intuitive. We actually have a host on the network, Charlene, who was editing in GarageBand, and she switched to Audition, and she loves it, and I don't think she had much trouble with it. It took her just, you know, a few shows to get used to it, but I think it's more of a mental obstacle for people than anything real. And a price obstacle. That's the one thing there.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a price obstacle. Unless you, I guess, can land one of the older editions of Audition, then you can avoid paying the, what is it, $19, $20 a month for the individual user?
I think that's what it is. I have the entire Creative Cloud because I use many, many applications every day in different areas of my work. And so I pay $50 per month for all of Creative Cloud. But I believe that all the applications except for Photoshop are $20 per month. And then Photoshop, I think they have a $10 per month option because they got so much backlash from semi-pro photographers, you know, people who use Photoshop, but they're not actually generating a lot of money from the photography that they're doing. Okay. They got a lot of backlash on the pricing for Photoshop.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, one of the things that if people are listening saying, well, you know what, I do want to try Adobe Audition, they can do. They do give a month free trial on it. So that's at least something for them to get started. So Adobe Audition, do you record your podcast directly into Audition, or are you recording on some external system and then going into Audition?
Right now, I record directly into Audition. Now, okay. I would like to get a digital recorder and start recording into a digital recorder. I don't have one right now. That's on my list of hardware that I'd like to get. I listen to a lot of shows about podcasting, and everyone talks about their gear, and they have these huge setups, and in the Google podcasters community, people are always posting, like, I'm starting a podcast and I ordered my gear, and they'll have a photo of like a mixer and a noise gate, external noise gate, and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, like, I've been podcasting for 4 years. I do a show every single day. I have published, I've hosted, I lost count. I mean, 400 or more podcasts I've produced. Probably 700 to 800. We've got over 1,000 on our network. And all I have is, I have a Shure SM58 microphone, dynamic microphone. I have an M Audio Fast Track box. So I have my XLR mic plugged in there that goes into the computer. And I have Adobe Audition. I don't have a mixer. I don't have a noise gate externally or anything. I do it all in the software because it works for me. And eventually, I probably will add a number of different things, but I don't have fancy hardware.
I was talking with John Wilkerson in the past couple of weeks, and he uses an Audio-Technica microphone and his iPad to do his podcast. And his podcasts sound crystal clear. You wouldn't be able to tell his recording system or setup from mine or from another podcast that's out there. So you don't need a ton of equipment or to go overboard with your equipment when you're just starting out, especially.
Right. Exactly. And everyone always comments on my shows and how good they sound. You know, they're not perfect, but compared to other podcasts, just the average podcasts, people always comment on our shows as being some of the best produced shows that they've heard. And we do it with very minimal hardware.
Well, so it's always good to keep the price down when you're dealing with a ton of hardware and podcasting. Plus, having less gear it makes it less things can go wrong. So that's good. So tell me, other than the editing, what about Adobe Audition really sells you on Adobe Audition for you?
Well, Adobe Audition, the first thing that sold me on it was the waveform, because I told you I like to be able to see the waveform. I can see things in the waveform without listening to them when I'm editing, especially when you work with the same co-host a lot. If you have a co-host who says a lot, or clears their throat a lot, or little things like that, you know what it looks like in the waveform. So I can go through the waveform really quickly in Audition because it's so big, and I can see those things, and I can just mute them before I actually get into editing the show. And it saves me a lot of time because I don't have to stop continuously as I'm actually listening to the playback of the show, because I've already knocked that out up front. And it's really easy to do that type of editing prep work, I would say, in Audition. So that's one thing. And then when I'm actually editing, Audition has really great automatic blending capabilities. So if you splice, and so you're going to take out a section of audio and you just want to pull these two pieces together, just slide it over. And most of the time, Audition will blend it seamlessly without you having to do very much. And I'm talking about things where someone says, what I think about this episode is so-and-so, and I want to take that out. I can actually very quickly eyeball in the waveform, even though it looks like a blob, where the W sound starts and the M sounds in well, what I think about. And just splice it there, slide that over, and Audition will blend that so that you cannot tell that I've cut those sounds right in the middle. And it doesn't take it hardly any time at all.
Yeah, very. It does. It does very smooth transitions, and that's one of the beautiful things about Adobe. Anything else in Adobe that really kind of that sells you on it?
Yeah, definitely. There are things that I hear a lot of other podcasters talk about, tools they use, things they need to do, and they use third party tools, a lot of free tools, and that's great. I mean, they work, and I'm not really an open source person, though. I'm not big on open source. I really don't like Audacity, for example. I think if you can have all these things in one tool, it really helps speed up your workflow. So for me, you know, things that you need to do, like noise reduction, it's really important, because especially on a network like ours, where we have 14 or 15 regular hosts, and then we have at least a dozen frequently recurring guests. And then we also bring in actors and writers and producers and all sorts of people for interviews all the time. We really cannot control the environment in which people are recording. And so we get some tracks that are very noisy. And for that, we need to be able to run noise reduction. And Audition makes it really easy for you to take a segment of a track, create a noise print from that of the background noise, and then pull that noise out of the track without affecting the overall sound quality of the track. And it has a couple of ways you can do it. You can do it as a process where you do what I just described, or Audition also has a very useful tool called adaptive noise reduction, which is like a filter, so it's non-destructive. You can put it on a track and it will actually analyze the track as it goes, and it will clean out noise along the way. It's very, very processor intensive, though. So unless you have a really, really high-end system, it's hard to use it in real time while you're editing, but you can always apply it after you edit and then have it run as Audition is mixing down the final cut. And that's one way that you can do it. So that can be useful as well. And also, you know, you have built-in noise gates, great EQ capabilities built-in. And one that's important for me is volume matching, because of the diversity of hosts and equipment that we have on our network, I get tracks that are at wildly different volume levels. And early on, when I was using GarageBand or Logic, you know, I would try to match those by ear, where I'm just adjusting the volume, or I'm putting an EQ on it or a compressor to help level out the volume and bring them together. But what I do with Audition is that I actually have a target volume for the tracks. So there's LUFS, the loudness units relative to full scale. It's called LUFS, LUFS, which is the same thing pretty much as LKFS, if people know that. And there are target guidelines for media for what is the target LUFS. And I target everything at minus 20, which is right in the middle of what I have found for podcasting. People have done research and they've analyzed different shows to find out what the average volume level is. And so minus 20 is right in the middle, and I use that. Levelator, which is what I hear a lot of people talk about that they use a lot, typically generates files around minus 18. And the iTunes sound check, if you tell it to check your volume on your music tracks and level them out so you don't get blasted when you play them back or have to turn your volume up, that's around minus 16. So I actually have that setting for all my tracks. And with Audition, there's just a little panel, and you take all your tracks and you drag them over into that panel. Audition analyzes those. You set up whatever you want, and there are many different settings that you can use to target different standards. And then you just click run, and it will actually process all the tracks and level them out so that they're all at the same target volume. And I always do that before I start editing. I do noise reduction first, then I do volume matching. And I just find that having that capability inside Audition makes my workflow really, really quick. And I know that I'm ending up with tracks where everyone speaking is really close so that the listener isn't having to struggle.
Well, you know, and I think that the thing that I find some podcasters struggle with is, you know, we have a time poverty. We're trying to record shows. We are editing. And the last thing you want to do is add to the amount of time it takes you to edit a show and release it. And so if you can do this all in one program, you're cutting the amount of software you need open, the amount of programs you need to target, and the amount of time you need to between switching from one track to another. I think that Audition serves that purpose real well.
Absolutely. Another thing I use in there that I like are the different export options, because one thing that we have on our network is at the end of all of our shows, we have a network promo where we have little snippets of all the different shows each week so people can get a feel for how much activity we have on the network. And to do that, when we're editing, if we hear something while we're editing that would make a great snippet, it's usually 10 to 12 seconds, I want to save that out. And in Audition, it's very easy for me just to highlight what I want. And using the app that we'll talk about in a minute on my iPad, I can just tap my screen and save that out as a separate file without ever breaking the flow of my editing process. And that's thanks to the fact that Audition has really robust export options.
So again, you know, if you are just getting into podcasting, Adobe Audition, if you're only using it for Audition, Chris, I don't know about you, but would you recommend someone who's just getting their feet wet in podcasting to go out and buy Audition? Or is this something that you're gonna have done podcasting for a little bit and you say, you know what, I'm really serious about that. This is for a serious hobbyist, someone that's taking podcasting maybe to the next level.
I would recommend ramping up to it. Now, if you're a designer, if you're a creative and you already have access to Audition and you don't have to buy it separately for this purpose, then I would suggest, and again, if you're that person, you're probably already comfortable with Adobe's interfaces. So there's nothing in Audition that's going to scare you. I would recommend working with Audition from the beginning. But otherwise, I would follow the path that I followed. You know, use what you have, GarageBand, Audacity, whatever, and get accustomed to editing first. And as you do that, you will find naturally the things that bug you about those applications and the things that you wish were easier. And then you can move to something like Audition, specifically to Audition, I would say, since that's what we're talking about here today. And the transition will be smoother probably. And because if you're someone who doesn't have it available right now, because you're not a creative, you just want a podcast, chances are Photoshop or Illustrator or InDesign, these would also be intimidating interfaces for you. And so in that case, I think it is good to ease yourself into it.
Well, Chris, where can people find you if they want to find out more about you and your network of shows on the interweb?
The best place to find the network is on our website, trek.fm. So that is the domain, trek.fm. And you can find everything there. If you use iTunes, the easiest way to find our shows is to go to itunes.com/trekfm. And then that will actually open up our artist section in the iTunes store in your iTunes app. And that's a great way to find everything because all the shows are there. We also have them broken down. We change up the topics from time to time. Like right now on our Deep Space Nine show, we're doing a series on the final chapter, the final 9 episodes. So I have a block in iTunes that says DS9, the final chapter. And as we publish new episodes about that, I will add them there. So that's a great way to find that. And as for me personally, Twitter is my favorite social media platform. And my username there is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. But I use the same username everywhere in social media. So wherever you are, you'll be able to look me up there. But Twitter is really where I like to chat.
Well, thanks a lot, Chris, for coming on and talking about Adobe Audition.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
So how has your dining experience been lately?
Waitress! Waitress! What did he order?
Oh, he had a special.
That's what I ordered! I changed my order for the soup.
Good move.
Oh, no. Not again.
Hello, my baby.
Well, if it's been like that poor fella, then we'd like to suggest the Sci-Fi Diner podcast for great, tasty, and spicy cuisine. Weekly, we offer up top news, interviews, and have great conversations on what's going on in the world of sci-fi. Make your reservation today at thescifidinerpodcast.com.
Check, please.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Christopher Jones from Trek FM, this network of podcasts that he runs all about Star Trek. If you love Star Trek, be sure to check out their shows. They take a little bit of a different, unique approach when you talk about Star Trek. Many Star Trek shows are out there doing episode by episode reviews, and they're great, but they don't do that. They do something just a little bit different. I wanted to respond to just a little bit of some listener feedback. This came in from Mark from Solo Talk Media. He said this: I should be caught up listening in a few days, but I just wanted to tell you that I'm loving the show so far. So thank you, Mark, for the kind compliments. He also goes on to talk about how when I've been mentioning the URLs, I've been saying backslash, and I guess technically it's not a backslash. That's why earlier on the show you heard me say slash and not give a direction for it, because I don't know what the heck you call it. Is it forward slash, backslash, sideways slash? I'm sorry if that was bugging anyone else out there, and I will try to be better at just saying slash so I don't get myself into that trouble. And I do have really, Mark, you gotta understand, I really appreciate you telling me that, because unless you guys let me know things that maybe aren't maybe sounding quite right from your end, because I'm editing it, I get really close to it. And when you get really close to an episode you're working with, sometimes you don't always realize the nuances or the way things are coming across. I know that a few of the episodes, my voice sounded pretty bass heavy, and I think I've corrected that at least to some degree. If that's still an issue, please let me know. I do want to hear from you, podcastingguru@gmail.com, and I would love to hear your thoughts. I believe that's about it. Until next time, keep podcasting, stay learning, and by all means, keep listening.